Welcome, everyone, to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. I am your host, Jimmy Traina, back first podcast of 2019, where it's actually like a timely one. We taped last week's in December. Last week, of course, was the Office Roundtable with Alan Sepinwall and Dan Harron. The feedback on that podcast from Twitter people was tremendous. People seem to enjoy it. I am scheduled to have a cast member from The Office on the podcast sometime in January. I can't give you all the details yet. The interview is supposed to happen this week. Once it does, I will give you the details, but it's going to be a good one if it comes through. So that's going to be at the end of January. This week's show, we have two interviews for you. First, Joe Buck, who calls Rams Cowboys on Saturday night for Fox. And then Jim Ross, the legendary WWE announcer, will join us to talk about the life of Mean Gene Okerlund, who sadly passed away last week. Next week on the SI Media Podcast, Bill Walton. So if you are not a subscriber and you're just coming across this, hit the subscribe button. If you like any of these podcasts, please review it, rate it, give it the stars. It helps tremendously. Please, if you're listening, rate, review. It's a tremendous help. Subscribe. So I'm not going to get into too much stuff here because we got good interviews. Trying to think. There's really no media things I really need to get into this week. So we're going to go to Joe Buck, who was phenomenal, by the way. A lot of Saved by the Bell. If you don't know out there, Joe, there was a little controversy. Joe was reading a promo for a new Fox show, and he pronounced Mark Paul Gosselaar's name Mark Paul Gosselaar, and Twitter had a field day with that. So Joe and I go in depth on that hard-hitting topic and other things. Joe is great. And we have Jim Ross on Mean Gene Okerlund. Next week, Bill Walton. Coming up a couple of weeks from now, cast member from The Office. Last week, we had The Office Roundtable. Other things in the archives was the 2018 year in review. You should check out Bill Burr in the archives and a bunch of other things. So check it all out on the SI Media Podcast. Let's get this week rolling with Joe Buck. All right, joining me now, man who calls a big game this week with the Cowboys and Rams for Fox, Joe Buck. Joe, how are you?
I'm well. How are you doing?
I'm well, but I don't want to start off on a negative note and go right to the controversy, but, you know, this is going to be some hard-hitting.
It's big. It's a big controversy.
It's big, and I'm a hard-hitting journalist, so we got to get right to it. I mean, okay, here yeah. I am. I name you and Troy the broadcast team of the year on SI.com on our year-end awards feature, and then right after that, you go on national TV and disrespect one of the great actors of all time, Mark Paul Gosselaar, a.k.a. Zach Morris, from one of the great shows of all time, Saved by the Bell. How do you explain yourself?
Well, this is going to come in like a four-part answer. So here's the first part. When it debuted, I looked this up, I was 20. and I watched a lot of Saved by the Bell in my early 20s, which really kind of, I think, started to make me feel creepy watching a show about high school. But I was well aware of Mark Paul. I was well aware of the great Dustin Diamond, well aware of really the entire cast, Tiffany and Matisse, and right on down the line, Tiffany probably being the main reason why I was watching.
And many others.
Right. So every time I saw his name, Mark Paul, we'll leave the last name out of it for now, on the credits, I always in my mind thought that that's how you pronounced it, the way it's spelled, which is, I think it's, the end of it is L-A-A-R.
Correct.
I believe.
Yes.
So forever, since I was 20, I've always thought that's the way you pronounce his last name. So I have been saying it incorrectly for the better part of a month now, and nobody at Fox or in our truck or anywhere said to me, hey, you know, you're screwing up the guy's name. It's Gosselaar. Okay, well, so whatever. So then I say it in the Cowboy game on whatever night that was, Saturday.
Yep.
And then it's like, oh, a Twitter storm, and then you got to answer Twitter stuff and all that. So what I did, and I'm not a journalist. I've admitted that on HBO. But journalistically, I thought it would be best if I talked to this guy, Mark Paul Gosselaar.
Oh, really?
And so I got his number. He got mine. He called me. We talked yesterday for maybe, I don't know, a half hour. And now I consider him one of my best friends. And here's the beauty of the whole thing. I said, tell me you don't have an uncle that pronounces your last name Gosselaar.
Right.
And he said, no, actually, you're pronouncing it correctly. When I got into TV and whatever, I kind of dumbed it down and just said Gosselaar because that would be too difficult or sound weird if I pronounced it the way it really is pronounced. He said, in fact, the way you pronounce my last name is Hoselaar. It's Dutch. And I said, all right, well, good. So I was closer to the actual pronunciation, not having seen any in-depth interviews over the years with Gosselaar, but he was great. And we're trying to find a way to inject this whole thing back into the broadcast in L.A.
That was my next question. I mean, first of all, I guess you can say Joe Buck has been vindicated if Mark Paul takes you off the hook. And yes, Fox would be very smart to somehow keep this going.
But because they don't think about it. I have to think about it. So well, I went to the back channels to get him, and I'm like, we gotta come up with something. Yeah. So we either will or we won't, but that's kind of the way I'd like to do things.
Maybe.
The problem is it too inside, you know?
Absolutely.
I realize that Twitter reacted, but I'm not sure that speaks for 30 million people that are watching across
Listen,
the country.
30 million people know Saved by the Bell. They're familiar with it. They love it. It's a cult classic. I'm thinking.
I know. My mom won't even speak to me anymore because I botched the end of his day. In fact, he didn't even know it was a thing when we spoke yesterday. And he said that one of his friends, a huge Patriots fan, called him and said, oh, Buck just totally hacked up your last name.
Here's what I'm thinking.
He laughed at it and whatever.
Here's what I'm thinking. Pass this along to the, I don't know who's in charge of the Eric Shanks or my friend Jacob Ullman. Pass this along. We've got Mark Paul doing the Zach Morris. We get Troy doing Slater and you as Screech, and we do a little skit. Who cares about Cowboys Rams?
Right. Great. Yeah.
Oh, I mean, Aaron, you got Aaron. Aaron could be. She could do the Tiffany Amber Thiessen. There you go.
Yeah, and you know, I think you're on to something. I just think you do have to remember we're there to cover the game, but I think the game becomes kind of secondary to what we're talking about.
Absolutely.
It's a big deal.
And I have to say, and I've said this many times over the years, I think the tweets that you get are just absurd at this point, and I know you've talked about it, but I have to say the Joe Buck bashing that took place because of the mispronunciation I found amusing. I think
it's amusing more than anything. I don't take any of that stuff personally. I was disappointed in myself in that I didn't really check as to the proper pronunciation, because part of our pregame ritual going into any stadium is to meet with the PR guys right before kickoff and go, all right, let's go through the roster number 0 to number 99, and let's go through everybody's pronunciation and how they want their name pronounced, because, you know, sometimes even the ones you think are the most obvious aren't.
Right.
And so, you know, then you get, you know, not only this guy's name who is idolized by millions because of his role as Zach Morris, but he's now on a Fox show at the very network where I'm broadcasting. So shame on me two times over.
Yeah. My favorite tweet about it was someone named Ethan Booker, a disgusting act by Joe Buck attempting to pronounce Mark Paul Gosselaar's name. Thought that was creative.
Right, but you tell Ethan, you know, you tweet at him, I'm not going to.
No.
That it's really Hoselaar. So yeah. I was at least, you know, down the middle.
Well, since we're talking about you reading the promo for Mark Paul Gosselaar's new show, before we get to the serious stuff here with the Rams and Cowboys, one of the things, I don't think it spun off from this, I forgot. I know what it was. You were reading a promo during one of the games for the Masked Singer show. And I don't know. I observed that. I didn't think you were maybe loving the promo, but it did well in the ratings, and I don't want to get you in trouble, so we'll just push that aside. But I said, and it became this thing on Twitter with, I think I said, I wish that Fox would have gotten the WWE with SmackDown years ago instead of this coming year, because it would have been great to hear you read the promos for SmackDown when the wrestlers had the really weird and outlandish names. Things are a little, like, now they usually stick to, you know, there's Seth Rollins, Roman Reigns, Dean Ambrose, John Cena. The names are somewhat normal, but it would have been great if you had to read the promos. You know, tomorrow night on Fox, Val Venus takes on the Godfather with the Ho Train and that sort of thing. It would have been much more amusing.
I know, but that all falls into the category of, like, whatever the guy's name was, whose tweet you just read.
Yeah.
The whole, that's a disgusting act, because it goes back to the Randy Moss thing, which goes back to, like, this perception that I'm some, you know, uptight dweeb that just, you know,
I think you
brings out a white glove at the beginning of every game and runs my gloved finger over the desk in front of me and, you know, gets mad because there's dust on the desk.
Right.
That's just, I am so far the opposite of all that, but if that's the perception.
No, I think that's so long ago that we know that that's not the Joe Buck we know now. But I'm looking forward to you reading the promos for Thursday Night SmackDown. I want to see how hard you sell it.
No, I'm in. And you probably don't know this because, you know, I reside in the Midwest and St. Louis is just an afterthought or a flyover spot for you. But wrestling was massive in St. Louis and all the greats came through here in my childhood.
Right.
I mean, you know, whether it's the Von Erichs or Dick the Bruiser, Andre the Giant or all these, and that was my Sunday morning, sometimes Saturday morning viewing was just plopped in front of the TV watching Channel 11, you know, do this wrestling. And so I was a fan from way back when, but I have to admit, I'm going to have to get caught up.
Yeah.
There's been about a 20-year gap in there.
I can't wait to see what Fox does with it. I know that they're going to do a pregame show for SmackDown. You're lucky you have the Thursday Night Football. They won't ask you to do the SmackDown pregame show. How did you like doing the two games this year? It seemed to work out as well as it possibly could have, because you guys did get a lot of good games, even the games that maybe weren't great on paper. I remember the what was it? Titans, Jaguars, and Derrick Henry went nuts for 200 and something yards. It seemed like every Thursday, either was a good game or something really wacky happened. So it turned out, I think, to work out pretty well. How did you assess the season and doing the two games a week?
Yeah, I mean, it was a lot more work, but you know, I said this during the course of the season when people were asking me when I was doubling up on not just the football, but baseball. That's the way I grew up watching my dad work. I mean, every week, not just for 2 months, and not just one time over the course of whatever, however long I've been doing this for 25 years. He did this all the time. And so if you care enough and you do the reading, you can pretty much go in and do the game. And you don't have to act like you've watched every snap of the season when you show up in week 11. You can kind of take it for what it is. And I think it was good for Troy and me to not dwell on a game, to not leave a game on Sunday, and then you start the process up again on Monday, and you don't do another game till the next Sunday, and you just chewed on this thing for so long that you miss a lot of the big stories because you're so down deep in the weeds on what's going on with these two teams. I almost think it's better to kind of, you know, do your work. We did a lot of conference calls, didn't watch a ton of practice in person. Troy watched his tape on his own, spent one full day on each team, and you go in and do the game. And I think that was better for the two of us. I think for him it was great because I think he was a little looser and a little more willing to have fun, and I'm used to that, having grown up doing baseball every night. You know, filling 3 hours and you know, kind of having fun with it is what I prefer to do anyway.
I absolutely thought Troy was looser this year. I thought he had his best year ever this year.
He did, and yeah. I think he's more willing to, and I don't know if this is just because the, you know, he decided this at the start of the year, or if doing all these games kind of took the defense away from him, but I think he's just been way more willing to say what he feels. And, you know, whether it's about officiating, which both he and I, you know, I think sometimes it goes too far, and I'm guilty of that too, because I think the fan at home, the call is what it is and you move on. Or it's about, you know, somebody not having a great game or somebody having a great game and going down that path. I just think the whole thing felt better, and I thought he was at his best all year long.
Yeah, and I feel he's flown under the radar the past couple of seasons, I think, because Romo came on last year as the rookie and was the darling, and rightfully so. He was tremendous. And then this year ESPN went with the new booth, and that got a lot of attention. But Troy, like you said, he does seem like he's taken off any reins he had at any point and is willing to go at. Now, I'm glad you mentioned the refs because I wanted to bring that up. Al Michaels on Sunday said something as bold as you're going to hear an NFL broadcaster say after a bad call, and he asked, are the refs just making things up as they go along right now? I'm curious, if you make remarks like that, do you hear from, the NFL is not going to contact you, but they'll contact Fox executives. Does that go on ever if you take some shots at the refs?
Yeah, I have not experienced that. I'm not naive, and I'm not saying that that doesn't happen. I remember when I was a kid, and I was in the booth with my dad, and I was doing the Cardinals when I was 21, and I was next to my dad. He and I were broadcast partners for, I don't know, 7 or 8 years on the radio. And I remember when I would get on a home plate umpire from the booth about, you know, borderline pitch and so doesn't get the call again, and I'm starting to lean onto the side of being overly critical of the umpire, he would kind of give me a look out of the corner of his eye like, that's enough. And it was really the only thing that he critiqued me on, and it was just a look when we were broadcast partners when I was in my early 20s and watching Saved by the Bell. And I was aware that I think it's valid. I mean, I don't think that Troy's criticism, my criticism, even Al's criticism, and I'm not going to speak for him, I don't think it's so much that it's criticizing the guys on the field that are doing their best in, I think, a really tough environment with all that's put on them. I think it's more about what's put on them. I think it's more about kind of the rule changes and trying to determine whether a defender's landing on a quarterback with all of his body weight and how you avoid that. And it's made it, I think, really tricky for these officials. And it's something that Mike Pereira is in our booth now every week. We talk about it all the time. The officials are in a really tough spot. I don't think even Al's explanation or what he said, I think it's more about the environment and how difficult it's become with the depth of that rule book and how every rule seems to have an exception and where you put the ball and does the clock start. And it just becomes, you know, like legalese, and, right. And it really disrupts the flow of a broadcast. But I've never experienced anybody from the league calling me on anything I've said or Eric Shanks, you know, being the conduit right. For that happening.
See, I mean, the issue is there's going to be blown calls. It's part of life. You're never going to prevent that. It's when they're getting the call wrong after a 10-minute replay where nobody knows what's going on. That's what the issue. And that was what Al was critiquing as well. And it does seem like it's become a worse problem. It doesn't help, too, when they're blowing the whistle and teams are getting robbed of touchdowns and stuff like that. It's not an easy job, like you said.
Well, in that specific case, though, to be fair to those guys and to the league, they got the call right. And I think what didn't help the situation was when they went to Terry in the booth and he was, you know, confused or didn't have it correctly. I immediately got on the phone with Mike Pereira just because I was watching as a fan. We did the game Saturday night, and Mike said it's a simple rule. You know, if there is no clear recovery in the case of that fumble right. on the reception, then if the ball doesn't get recovered clearly or if it doesn't immediately go out of bounds, then you have to stick with the original call. And so they actually got it right. And you know, so some of that frustration – if I'm Al Riveron or I'm the league, I go, well, wait a minute, you know, yeah, there are times where we're ripe for being criticized, but that just wasn't one of them.
I feel like also Al Michaels is in that position where, you know, he's 74 years old. He knows he can pretty much do whatever he wants. Do you feel like you're in that position yet?
I'm not. God, no. He is. And
you'll be
right.
There. You'll be
there. I am in the position of let's go down that road right. And, you know, see how long it takes to get fired. And to him, I don't think he thinks that way. And I think he's earned that. And I think he's seen enough football, called enough games. He's felt the flow of games. He knows what feels right, and what feels off. And when, you know, an offside on a defensive lineman takes too long to get, announced and then penalized with regard to yardage, I think it frustrates him. I think it frustrates everybody. He just, you know, he's got a little more leash, a lot more leash than any of us, because he is who he is.
Now, listen, you've been at Fox a very long time. Did you read the recent piece? It was from Bill Simmons' website, The Ringer. Brian Curtis wrote it. I had him on this podcast a few weeks ago about, he did an oral history of Fox getting the NFL from CBS. Did you read the piece?
I did.
It was tremendous, I thought.
He's unbelievable. I like him. He did a piece on me, and it was, I think, fair. And I'm not saying that if you know, it was some hatchet job, I wouldn't have read it. But, you know, I think he's a really talented guy. I think he's a well-meaning writer, and I think he wants to get it right. And I think that the depth and the detail that was in that article was mind-blowing to me. And I was there. I mean, you know, I wasn't there prior to March of 94 when I went out for the audition, but I can tell you everything from that point forward that I was aware of or involved in, he nailed. So it was great.
I just realized I asked you a very stupid question, because I asked if you read it and you were in it. You were part of the oral history, so that was dumb by me. But I loved that article so much, I had Brian on to talk about it. And I think he hit the nail on the head in that some of us, I almost forget that Fox started out with Madden and Summerall, because we feel like you and Troy have just done it so long now. Do you feel like the elder statesman at Fox, even though you're not old? Because you've been there a long time.
No, it's weird. Yeah. I think I need to see a therapist, because I got into this business, not just at Fox. I was 24, about to be 25 when I got hired at Fox. But I was, as I said earlier, 21 when I was doing the Cardinals, and I was around professional sports. I mean, I was everywhere with my dad. When he took me to every National League city by the time I was 12, he liked having me around. So I always looked up to all these other announcers. I looked up to all these other players and coaches and general managers. And so now at 49, even though I don't think I'm in the category of old, I'm getting there, midlife, whatever it is, I still look at players, GMs, head coaches that are way younger than me. I still look at them as older than me. Right. And I think I'm still apologetic for things I say, thinking that, you know, me as the young kid new to this thing, I shouldn't be having that opinion. And yet, I don't know. I've been at Fox, you know, for 25 years. And so, I don't know why that is in my head, but I don't know that it'll ever be different. I'll like probably go into a game with a walker, and, you know, oxygen as I'm getting ready to do the game, and think that the starting quarterback is older than I am. And that just shows, I guess, how dumb I am.
No, I think it's all accurate, because I think Brian did such a good job with it's watching a game with you and Troy now is an afterthought. You guys are the standard now. Romo's only in it a year or two years. You know, Alan, Chris, I think the Sunday night thing is different from the Sunday after. That Sunday 4:25 has really become the money game. I know they have the flex in the Sunday night, but if you're the diehard every week, in and out, every game, Sunday 4:25 is the special time, I think.
Yeah, I agree with that. And then you think of, you know, whatever constitutes a generation, the dictionary definition of a generation, I think is 20 years. So we're coming up on that here for Troy and me. And at the beginning, you know, I'm sure people don't even remember that it was Troy, Chris Collinsworth, and me.
Right, right.
And so the three of us took over for Madden and Summerall in 2002. And then we went through 2004, which was our first Super Bowl year, and then Chris left after that. So we did three together that way. And then, you know, Troy and I are the second longest running, not just currently, but I think ever. So, you know, we don't think of it that way.
Right.
I know he doesn't. When somebody told us that and he saw it on Twitter that we are now number two to Madden and Summerall all time in games. And I think at some point we were 100 behind, so we're now less than 100 behind. That was stunning to me.
Yeah.
And I think blew him away that we've been at it longer really than anybody but two guys.
That is amazing. I did not know that. Wow.
Could be wrong.
I mean,
Twitter. So
I'm thinking about it in my head. I mean, I'm sure whoever put that out there, he didn't get that from, some.
I mean, I don't know who tracks that. I don't know who would keep track of how many games Madden and Summerall did together. But
it's not hard.
Whatever
to track.
It is, yeah. Troy and I have been at it long enough to where I know what he's going to say before he says it. He knows what I'm going to say before I say it. I know when he's got something he wants to get in. He knows when I'm itching to go. And there are times where I'll put my arm out or we'll get in our ears, shut up. And it's like, let's lay out, let's let it happen. And nobody gets offended. And that's
right.
That's the best thing. That's what I think the new groups, it's what we experienced in golf, 4 years ago, that when you're all new, nobody really totally trusts the other person. I have that now with Paul Azinger. We didn't have that a couple years ago. And I think, Witten and the guys at Monday Night Football, it is a high pressure job. And when you don't know where the other person is on who's in your foxhole kind of thing, it's unnerving. And right. I think it's harder now than ever to break into this business. I think Witten has been way better than people give him credit for. And it is not easy. It is not easy to come off the field, put on a headset, have somebody tell you in your ear what they're doing, look into a camera, go through a replay, be succinct and get it in before the next play. People just think that's simple, and it's not, because if it was, there would be a lot more churn in this business,
right.
And there really isn't, because at that level, it's a hard thing to do.
Well, Witten had a lot going against him. I mean, giving him a three-man booth was, I think, a mistake. Two-man booth is always so much better. And then, of course, they had Booger McFarlane and Crane. So how are you supposed to, generate some chemistry and not step on each other's toes? And then on top of that, I mean, they're giving him a standalone game each week, number one game for Monday night instead of, maybe even you started out with Tim Green. It's probably, the third or fourth team on Fox. They put him right in the spotlight.
Yeah, exactly.
So he had a lot going against him. So doing it the year after Romo, which was this aberration, it was all stacked against him. So I have sympathy for him from that standpoint.
Yeah, I agree with all that. And I really, all of that I agree with. But I just think he's better than people realize. Yeah. And I think he could be really, really good. It's just going to take time. And I think this business now more than ever, especially with the knee-jerk reactions on Twitter or, what's worse than that are bosses who listen to or read the knee-jerk reactions on Twitter. If that were the case at Fox, I used to work for David Hill. David Hill didn't need anybody, whether it's an unnamed person on Twitter or another network executive, to tell him what he should think was good.
Right.
And that's why those guys are in and women are in those positions. They're the ones making the calls. But it really hits at your confidence and your security when you know all that's buzzing around out there. I admire Jason for plugging through. And again, I've said it privately to a lot of people in this business. I think he's way better than people understand. And I think it's way harder than people get. And I think he's really going to be really good as long as they stick with him.
Well, I've said this a million times. I probably said it to you the last time you're on the podcast. If you're a play-by-play guy or an analyst doing games and you check Twitter, you're insane. You should be put in an institution.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a no win. It's not even really bad. I think the beauty of it is that people care. That's kind of a way people in a roundabout way show that they care. If you did a game and I did a game and Troy did a game, Troy gets all the Dallas fans that think he hates the Cowboys, and then I get all the baseball stuff that I've pissed off every
fan. Well, you hate every team. Right, you hate every team.
Yeah, I mean, I've done it so long now, 21 World Series or whatever the number is, that I've made everybody mad because I'm jumping around screaming for the other side winning. It's just, if you go down that rabbit hole, it's not going to be pretty, but at least people care. And I... That's way better than doing it and nobody makes a peep. That'd be way more disappointing and unnerving than people saying, "Oh, you hate my team because you're not rooting for them." That's pretty simple to understand.
That's a very half full, I've been through therapy answer right there.
Oh yeah, trust me, I've kept three therapists well compensated because of Twitter in my life.
Yes, the last time I had you, I spoke to you on a podcast. You had said that you may see a day where you stop doing MLB and continue with NFL. Where does Joe Buck stand on that? January 2019.
You know what? I don't know that it changed, but I think I sat back and realized how much I enjoy working with John so much on baseball. I think I'm being realistic there, though. I think that at some point, you know, I'm probably stupid, or I was selling a book at the time when I really started talking about it, and I'd just come off a season, so I was tired. But, you know, I'm willing right now to call timeout or hit the eject button and be done, and I've done 20 times more than I ever hoped I would do. So I'm playing with house money that way. And at some point, you know, my wife and I we have twin boys that are 8. I've got a 22-year-old girl, 19-year-old girl, and 2 0-year-old boys. At some point, as I get older and as they get older, I'm going to have to pare things down. And going through this last year the way I went through it, which was fun and great, and I wouldn't trade it for anything, at some point that's not going to be sustainable. So something's going to have to go. Or Fox is going to say, "Hey, we're sick of you. We've got 5 other guys that we can't wait, to hear do the World Series." That I would have no. I'm so lucky. So I will see where it goes. I'm signed for the next 4, and you know, with these boys, I'm worried about this weekend, let alone 5 years from now. So I'm good. I'm all content.
So it'll be 4 and done. That's my prediction. Just talking about that.
All right, thanks, Jimmy.
All right, let's talk a little Rams Cowboys. So you get the Cowboys in there, which Fox is doing a dance over, and you get the LA market. But that's going to be a Cowboy home game, am I right?
Boy, I tell you, with the clips that I've read, and I didn't really realize or put 2 and 2 together, but with them having trained in Oxnard for all those years, you know, I went on and you know, tried to look up exactly where Oxnard is, right next to where they train, where the Rams train. And so when we talked to McVay, or I did the last time, our group had him back-to-back weeks. I didn't do the game against Green Bay. I was doing the World Series, but we talked to him the next week, and he said, "Joe, you were busy doing the World Series, and, you know, we're having to do silent count in our home stadium."
Yep.
And that was against Green Bay. And I think it's going to be a lot of the same for the Dallas Cowboys. So to me, as a play-by-play guy, that's like heaven. When you know there's going to be noise at the end of every play, no matter what happens,
right?
That makes my job easy. But yeah, I think it's, I don't know, 50-50, but there's going to be a lot of Cowboy fans.
Well, I think it's going to be like 60-40 Cowboy fans there. It's
been, really?
That Packer game, I remember watching it well, thanks to a wager. There were more Packers fans in that building than Rams fans for that game.
Well, I'll send Aaron into the seats. Or Meyer. Myers is better for that. I'll send Chris Myers in to just count, and we'll get a tally at the end.
I feel like the Rams have sort of flown under the radar the past month. They did not play well there last maybe 2/3 of the season. They picked it up the last couple of weeks. I feel like they've flown under the radar, and they might surprise some people Saturday. What's your take on the Rams?
Yeah, I feel the same way. I mean, I think at some point there's a chance where we all sit back midway through the second quarter or at the end of the first half and go, "Oh yeah, these guys are really, really good." And they showed it for the majority of the year. I mean, they've got obviously the new prototype coach. They've got a quarterback that took another major leap forward. The problem is they didn't have Gurley the last 2 weeks, and their defense was not what I think we all thought it would be coming into the year with all those former first round picks, and they add Sue, and then they added Fowler during the year, the two corners, Peters and Tlaib. But there are still pieces there, and they've got a coordinator who knows how to win playoff games and a Super Bowl. So I think the odds are better that we are reminded how good they are as opposed to, you know, it's more of the same with the way they finish the year. But if Gurley's not right, I mean, who knows?
Right, right.
Who knows how serious the knee is? It caused him to miss the last two games and be off, in essence, 3 weeks. Then we'll see. But if he's right, they're really freaking good.
Exactly. I have a feeling people are not paying as much attention to them as they should. Do you have the Super Bowl next year?
Yes.
CBS has it this year. When it's a season like this, now obviously it's a different year for you because you did the Thursday night game. That was the first year you're doing two games a week. But in a season like this where you don't have the Super Bowl, do you feel at this time of the year, oh, damn, I wish I was calling it? Or are you like, oh, I'm glad my season's over after next week and I've had enough?
Well, I've done enough of them now that I think that I've got it pretty much figured out. When I'm not doing it, it pisses me off, and I think, God, I wish I was doing it, because we've done all these games, and then you get to the very last one that means the most with the biggest audience, and you're not doing it. So the 2 years when we're not doing it, yeah, it bothers me that we're not doing it. The year that we do it, by the time they kick off, I think, God, I'm glad I only do this once every 3 years, because it's intense,
right.
And you've got that time off, and you've got storylines and interviews and all that other stuff that, and then you got to try to be perfect on the biggest stage in the world, and that's impossible in a live event with 100+ million people watching. It's kind of like the old, you know, whatever you do, don't look down. You look down, or hey, this plate's really hot, don't touch it.
Yeah.
When you start letting it get into your mind that over 100 million people are watching you do an on camera and picking apart, you know, your hair or your tie or your face or your forehead or whatever it might be, you can get absolutely locked up. And and so by the end of that thing, it's like, oh, thank God we got through it. I'm glad. Personally, I'm glad it's once every 3 years.
Yeah, it is. The pressure on that game is tremendous with all those people watching. What if you've, like you said, you've been doing this a long time now, baseball and football. If I asked you, what do you think? And don't give me the, oh, I don't know, I've never thought about it. What do you think is the greatest call of your career? Besides botching Mark Paul
Gosselaar's game. I think the one that we talked about last year, which was the Diggs call.
Yep.
And I say that only because in baseball, you know, I don't want to say it's predictable, but when, like, David Freese hit the home run in Game 6 of 2011, there's a progression there, and you kind of build, and you can watch the flight of the ball, you can see the reaction of the center fielder, and you know it's gone, and then you're kind of going to that moment where you make the call. And baseball kind of lends itself to that. That was one of the few walk-off moments in football, and it was breathtaking because, as we said last year, you're trained to think as a player, I would imagine, but certainly as an announcer, okay, there's 3 seconds left. If he makes the catch, he's got to get out of bounds so they have a chance to kick the field goal, and he spun around and nobody was there. And then he scored the touchdown. And
right.
So that was the breathtaking moment, is it was like, oh, well, there's not going to be a field goal. This game's over. And you state it, and you scream that the Vikings win, and then you be quiet and let the director do his thing. But I think all in for a walk-off moment like that, that was one that I don't think I'll forget.
Yeah, I thought that was as good as quality. I mean, everyone remembers, and rightfully so, the one where you paid homage to your dad, and we'll see you tomorrow night. But the Diggs was a phenomenal call.
Well, the see you tomorrow night was at the end of 2011 when I had a paralyzed vocal cord. And I had easily the worst year, not of my career, in some ways my life, but easily the worst year of any network announcer in the history of network announcers. Could not have been worse. I sounded like I was dying. It was painful to listen to. I can't even go back and listen to highlights. And I won the Emmy that year, which was my seventh, and I'm assuming final one, going the way this whole thing's trending, that I won it literally on one call. And it was basically a ripoff call from my dad. So in essence, my dad won that Emmy in 2011, and I just was able to survive. My voice was still screwed up when I made that call, but I was somehow able to squeak out the call. But yeah, that was not a humble brag. That was a way of me saying that call, you're right, people remembered, certainly in St. Louis and in Texas, but it was, I don't know, that year sucked, and I was just glad to be done with it.
Yeah. My personal favorite was the 96 World Series when Charlie Hayes caught the ball. The Yankees are champions of baseball. That's only because I'm a diehard Yankee fan, but my producer's a Met fan. He's got your Benny Agbayani 2000 versus the Giants home run. But the Diggs was the best home run call of your career by far, I think.
The Charlie Hayes thing, though, that was one where I didn't think about what I was going to say before I said it, and it was like, oh, holy shit, I just called the end of a World Series at Yankee Stadium, and it came out, and it sounded like other people who used to do it. That was a good moment.
And it was before everyone hated the Yankees, so it was special back then, too. That was before they started buying everyone free
agency. Yeah, Torrey
had
been losing his brother, Rocco had died, and then Frank had gone through a heart transplant. Yep. I mean, it was like the most emotional, feel-good, oh, how good is Derek Jeter time. And you're right. I mean, that was a really cool stretch there with the Yankees and Red Sox that I guess went through 2004.
Yep. When do you, where are you now? What state are you? You're in California right now?
No,
St. Louis. St. Louis. When do you go to California for the game?
I am going on Thursday evening.
Right. And then you get Saturday night, Sunday afternoon. Do you care about that? Does it make a difference to you?
No, I mean, you're right, though, with what you said earlier. I think, you see these ratings over the playoffs and you realize the power of the late Sunday window.
Yeah.
And it is the number one spot. But I think, they kind of left it up to us, I think, in some ways. And it just felt like Cowboys-Rams just has a feel to it like, man, I know it's Saturday night, but, God, it has the potential of being a spectacle. We'll see. I mean, usually they don't live up to that, but at least going in, that's what it feels like.
Well, we'll all be watching. I appreciate you coming on. We'll all be waiting for that next Mark Paul Gosselaar promo. The pressure is on.
Gosselaar.
Yeah. You should say it that way just to drive everyone crazy.
I know. But I mean, if you're not trying to get a Twitter reaction, you're not trying.
I'm just glad you watched Saved. The main concern from people on Twitter was that you had never seen Saved by the Bell. That was what
is insane.
Right.
And that's of all the things that pissed me off about the whole thing.
Right.
Not the least of which was doing a 3.5-hour live broadcast, and then that's the one thing that's talked about is the inference that I didn't watch Saved by the Bell. God. I mean, I was 20. I guess I was a little old, but, what the hell?
Yeah, because then I started thinking, like, okay, let's say, Jason Priestley was in the stands. Would Joe know how to say his name? I mean, you got to know the legends. You got to know the legends.
Absolutely. Yeah. I would even know that it's Ian Ziering.
There you go.
Ian.
There you go. Okay. That's redemption right there. All right, Joe.
Okay.
Appreciate it. Have fun on Saturday night, and thanks a lot for coming on.
Anytime.
All right. Thanks. Take care. All right. My thanks to Joe Buck. Before we get to Jim Ross for a little tribute to Mean Gene Okerlund, let me tell the SI Media Podcast listeners out there that this edition of the podcast is sponsored by Audible. Could listening make you a better parent, a better leader, and even a better person? Could listening to motivating fitness programs get you fit? Could listening inspire you to start something new? There's never been a better time to start listening. On Audible. With Audible, you get access to an unbeatable selection of audiobooks, including bestsellers, motivation, mysteries, thrillers, memoirs, and more. Audible has the largest selection of audiobooks on the planet now. And now with Audible Originals, the selection has gotten even more custom with content made for members. I cannot wait to check out Alan Sepinwall's new book, The Soprano Sessions, on Audible. The SI Media Podcast listeners out there know that Sepinwall was on the program last week to talk about The Office. He has that Sopranos book, Soprano Sessions. It just came out this week, and it is the perfect book for Audible. So let me tell you what you should do. Audible members can choose 3 titles every month, 1 audiobook and 2 Audible originals that you can't hear anywhere else. Audible members also get access to exclusive audio fitness programs to start the new year off on the right foot. Listen on any device, anytime, anywhere, at home, at the gym, on your commute, or just on the go. You'll also enjoy easy audiobook exchanges, rollover credits, and an audiobook library you keep forever, even if you cancel. Audible, the most inspiring minds, the most compelling stories, the best place to listen. Get started with a 30-day trial when you go to audible.com/media, or you can text the word media to 500-500 and listen for a change. Once again, 30-day trial, audible.com/media, or text the word media to 500-500. Audible.com/media, or text media to 500-500. Audible. And now let's go to Jim Ross as we reminisce about the great Mean Gene Okerlund. All right, joining me now, one of my all-time favorites from the wrestling world, the greatest wrestling play-by-play man ever, and the host of the JR Report every Wednesday for you podcast listeners out there, good old Jim Ross. Jim, how are you?
I'm great. Great. Thanks for having me on.
My pleasure. Wish I was having you on just to talk wrestling, but I wanted to pay a little tribute here to Mean Gene. You know, my age, I think Triple H said it best in a tweet, the soundtrack of a generation, certainly the soundtrack when I was a little kid. And then obviously you took over, I think, you know, when I was in my 20s there with the WWE. But Mean Gene in the 80s for sure was the voice, I guess, along with Vince and Bobby Heenan. How close were you to Gene throughout the years?
Oh, we're great friends. Yeah. I met Gene in 1993 when I came to work for Vince from WCW. And Gene, Bobby Heenan, and Gorilla Monsoon were three of the guys that understood territories, understood the psychology of wrestling and the dynamic of working for a wrestling company, especially in the territory days. So while others in the company were not as warm to welcome the enemy from WCW to their team, Monsoon and Heenan and Mean Gene were right there at my side, broke a lot of ground for me. And unbeknownst at the time, but I found out over time that, you know, they kind of negotiated peace with some people there that thought that I was there to take Oakland or take Monsoon's job or whatever. You know, I was just looking for work. So
right.
Gene has been instrumental in my whole WWE development from day one. So Gene could be everybody's best buddy, and no exaggeration. He would be great on to go into a ball game. He'd be great sitting at a bar talking football. He's great talking the business or business in general, life, real estate. He's a very shrewd businessman. So I love being around him, and I can see casting a movie where it's a buddy film.
Mm-hmm.
And if you had Okerlund available, he's the perfect buddy to be in a buddy movie.
Well,
he's just that guy. That guy you just couldn't stand to not be around. He was your friend, and the more you could be around him and laugh and be enlightened, the better off you were.
He was outstanding in those famous vignettes with Hulk Hogan, where Hulk and him are training, and Mean Gene's there.
Yeah, and the beauty of that to me was the fact that they had a basic outline of what they were going to try to accomplish in the taping of those segments, those vignettes that you mentioned. But they didn't have script. They didn't memorize lines.
Right.
I doubt very seriously if, knowing Gene and Hogan as I do, there's probably very minimal rehearsal, i.e. none. So, they worked through it and they felt it. And they worked off each other and the moment that they were in and produced some really good material, which is lacking today because, as you know, I said before on Twitter and so forth, that I believe the business right now is being overproduced.
Right.
And it's not allowing potential big-time breakthrough stars to grow as rapidly as they did in previous generations. And Gene helped foster all that. He knew his role as a broadcaster. He was the point guard. His job was to get the ball to the stars, i.e. to get the main event guys and the other talents over.
Right.
And he did that better than anybody.
And so did you. And it's interesting. It was like the two different eras there. And I was, when I heard that Mean Gene had passed, I was wondering, I was very curious for the reaction to it because, you know, he, like I said, I misread it from this standpoint. I know when I think Mean Gene, I think, 80s, Hulk Hogan, WWF. And I sort of undervalued or maybe misread how many people would know him from the WCW days. But I guess he was there a pretty long time, and I'm surprised how many people knew him from that job.
Well, they were getting, at one point there, you know, 83 weeks in a row, they were kicking our ass. So
right.
They were getting numbers, powerful numbers, and yeah. He was all over the television. He came there with a lot of name identity and was famous when he got there.
Yeah.
And he didn't miss a beat. You know, I think Gene got caught up in a thing in WWE that, you know, the sense of getting younger, the sense of where looks and you are more valued than is experience and talent.
Right.
Because I remember our deal, from what I was told, that, you know, Gene's contract was not going to be renewed at WWE. And Vince didn't tell anybody that, other than Gene. So that allowed Gene to go negotiate with a little bit of leverage.
Okay, right.
You know, it was the right thing to do for Vince. And Gene took advantage of it and signed a very lucrative deal because even though WWE was officially not in the picture, but nobody knew that.
Right.
So, and then he came back, and he's been back at WWE ever since.
Right.
Hey, look, for the guy to be on television all these years, man, under very discerning eyes anymore, HD, you know, everybody's got to be cute and pretty. You know, I feel a little bit of part of that that calamity as well.
Right.
In my back nine of life. But, you know, I saw Gene at Thanksgiving in North Carolina at a big wrestling fans convention mm-hmm. called WrestleCade. And we spent 2 days together, Friday night and then Saturday. And we drank and we had, you know, we talked and, you know, he was slower. He slowed down a lot, but, you know, he said he was trying to get healthier. You know, all those, I guess he had liver transplant, two or three of those. I'm not sure. I mean, seriously, he had multiple transplants.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's always battling something,
right.
But he didn't sell it. He wasn't going on Facebook or Twitter and talking about how bad he feels today.
Right.
That wasn't Gene.
Right.
That wasn't his game plan.
Gotcha.
So, I saw him, like I said, Thanksgiving. I'm glad I got to spend Thanksgiving with him. And we celebrated my Sooners beating West Virginia that weekend, I remember.
Right.
In Morgantown, big ball game.
Yep.
And Gene and I, it's one of the things we always had in common. We both love football, especially college football.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's a Nebraska guy.
Yeah.
And I'm a Sooner. So, enough said. You know, there's college football in everybody's DNA in that little situation.
Absolutely. It's such an interesting dichotomy because you mentioned about Vince, and it does seem like Vince is always looking to get younger and on-camera people, wrestlers, talent, get younger. But there is no audience. I don't care what sport you're talking about, baseball, football. No one has more fondness for nostalgia than wrestling fans.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting... what's the word I'm looking for there? It's two things going against each other, basically.
Yeah, it's frustrating. You know, I'm a, and maybe it's my ego, and you know, people, my close friends, the people I have worked with before, probably say, "Oh yeah, JR's got a big ego." When you're chubby, southern, and with three bouts of facial paralysis, if you don't have any self confidence or quote unquote ego in their verbiage,
right,
you're dead in the water. Ain't gonna make it. So that was Gene and I both had that same competitive nature, you know, older ball guy,
right?
You know, got those great pipes, and he wanted to compete. He wanted to stay in the game.
Yeah,
and I can relate to that 100%.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a certain part of you, depending on how you're wired, that you realize that when you start getting phased out, that somebody else on the outside looking in sees a different verdict for you than you perceive yourself.
Right.
I don't want to be taken out of the game or turn my jersey in and not be in the game anymore whatsoever, because that's me conceding that, well, some of you naysayers are right. I need to get my ass at home and sit in my chair and you know, don't drool.
Right.
But that's not how I'm playing my game. That's not the game of life to me.
No, you got
to
keep going.
Certainly was to Gene, because we talked about this very topic over a couple of cocktails on Friday night in Winston-Salem, the Friday night before Thanksgiving. The exact topic of wanting to stay in the game, to stay relevant, to have a purpose, to have a direction, to have somewhere to go, so to speak. And since his death, it's really hit me in the face, that whole deal. So
yeah.
I think maybe, God bless him. I love him. And maybe that's motivated me to be a little bit more structured and to have a plan for 2019. Stay in the damn game.
Well, you stayed in it with the Ross Report. That podcast has been going on a long, long time, has it not? You've been doing that for a long time.
Yes, it's I enjoy it because it's unedited,
right?
And I don't write a script. I write bullet points, and I enjoy the interaction with my guests and the various people that we have on, about in their lives. The one common denominator, Jimmy, is that all my guests have some degree of respect for the wrestling business and are fans of the business or are in the business in some way.
Yeah.
But there's a positive feeling between my guests and the genre that we've all battled, like being fat shamed. You know, how many of us that are wrestling fans, and when it goes public in your little group of buddies, how many of us have endured ridicule and teasing because you watch that damn stuff? Oh, you know it's fake. Yeah, I also know that John Wayne wasn't a cowboy, but I watched every one of his damn westerns like 10 times each.
Right.
So I don't know what's your point.
Right.
It's a presentation, as we both know. So, but Gene and I had that stuff in common. You know, we're two guys that really weren't supposed to make it as long as we did.
And
I think that's just.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I just think that was. It's something that. Of our generation and the way we got in the business, both those guys, radio guys in the beginning and things like that, not making any money. And to last this long as a non-wrestler in the wrestling business is very, very rare.
Yeah. And I thought you and Gene, I think it's probably the most underrated show that WWE has done. If my listeners out there are not familiar with this and you're a wrestling fan, go on the WWE Network and search for Legends of Wrestling. It's a roundtable panel show, one topic for each episode, and JR and Gene are on pretty much every episode. I think it's an excellent show. I've always been surprised that WWE didn't promote it more. Did you enjoy doing that show with Gene a lot?
Oh, he loved it. It was great for him, too, because that was a great role for him, back to that point guard analogy.
Yeah.
You know, he was just really terrific at throwing the ball around and follow-up questions and things of that nature. It was a lot of fun and so easy to produce.
Right.
So I would think, I don't know if anything's inexpensive to produce, but I wouldn't believe it's overwhelmingly expensive to do those shows. But boy, I had a lot of fun doing them. I mean, like you said, and you're right, wrestling fans like nostalgia. And that show checked a lot of boxes.
Yeah.
And I had a lot of fun. I wish they'd bring it back. You know, give
me
you a project to work on there. That'd be fun.
I would love for that to come back. I thought it was so well done and really enjoyed it, every episode of it. Tell the listeners out there who may not know, especially younger ones, how important was Gene to getting Hulk Hogan over and helping out his popularity in those early WWF days back then?
Well, Hogan was got over for a lot of reasons, but he had great charisma, as we all know, and he stood out in the crowd, as we all know, and his verbalizing was never an oratory. It wasn't a rehearsed in the prompter type scenario. He went on guts and instinct, and he and Gene worked very well together. And to go on guts and instinct, you got to be very careful, very comfortable with your broadcast guy, your partner, the stick man, which is what Gene was. So, and Hogan had 100% confidence in Gene that Gene was going to set him up the right way. And somewhere along that journey Hogan stumbled, or he had a look on his face like, I'm a little bit lost here. Oakland was able to discern that and throw in the life preserver, so to speak.
Right.
He saved a lot of interviews, and that helped in the early days of Hogan getting that rat down that he did forever. Oakland helped get him there. Oakland helped prepare him to be a verbalizing master. And, you know, because Hogan was not going to go out there and give you 10 minutes of verbiage.
Right.
He was a soundbite guy.
Right.
If you're a soundbite guy, you got to have a great setup man, because the setup man's got to give all the nuts and bolts so that the soundbite guy can only deliver the sizzle. So Gene delivered the steak, and Hogan delivered the sizzle. To me, it's that simple.
Yeah. And then you also had Hogan, of course, every feud he had back then was through someone with Bobby Heenan, and there's no one better on the mic than him. So,
right.
Everything
Vince had, he had great talents that were allowed to be themselves,
right,
by and large. They all had direction. Everybody got produced, but they didn't get as produced as definitively as many of the talents today seemingly are. And I think that's that takes away from the finished product, at least in my view.
So I don't know if you want to reveal this. If you don't, you don't have to. But when you were doing Raw, let's say through the Attitude Era, was Vince in your ear throughout the entire Monday Night Raw? How heavily produced were you during that time?
Not as produced as the folklore has it.
Okay.
He was very aggressive.
Right.
Because he's very passionate.
Right.
You know, and there's not a job there that he doesn't believe that he's not very good at.
Right.
He's probably right. You know, he was the greatest. Vince McMahon was the greatest villain in the Attitude Era.
Right.
That was a blessing in disguise for Lawler and me, because when he was this top villain, he was busy doing other things, pre-tapes and getting ready for segments or matches or whatever.
Ah.
So we didn't have as much of his direction.
Gotcha.
We got it before the show.
Right.
And then when he was not as busy as Mr. McMahon, and he was producing the show, it would only depend on how things went. If a segment didn't go as well as he had hoped, and it was presented in one way by the creative people, and it came off another, sometimes he needed somebody to vent to,
right,
and sometimes that guy was me. But I got it. I understood. You know, I also accepted his paychecks every week. They're nice. So I was cool with that deal. But he was not in every segment of every minute of every segment. He'd come and go, but you never knew where he stood. You knew. Right. Well, quite frankly, if you're a smart businessman, Jimmy, he's the boss.
Right, right.
You either run the plays he sends in, or you don't.
Right.
If you don't choose to run the plays, somebody else will be playing your position.
What was the most angry Vince ever got with you for something on play-by-play during Monday Night Raw? Not when you were at Talent Relations, not a backstage thing, but something during a Monday Night Raw. Can you share something where Vince may have chewed you out for something ridiculous or funny? Or
he chewed me out for not. He told me something to say during the match.
Right.
It's irrelevant, but he told me something to say, and I didn't say it.
Right.
So he's on the other end of the microphone, on the headset, right? He's screaming at me to say it. Then finally we go to break, and then he comes on very docile and very under control, unlike he was during the live, on live. And he said, JR, and I said, yes, sir. He said, did you hear me tell you to say it? And I said, I did. He said, well, it's a goddamn good thing you didn't say it, because it would have been wrong as hell.
Wow.
So I got the last word from him about that change before we went out to do our show.
Right.
That he gets engulfed in everybody else's business because everybody wants Vince time.
Right.
It's very important for everybody, either a creative or an agent or producer or whatever, to have Vince time. The funny part about that is he's so damn smart and street smart, he knows when they're milking the system to get Vince signed.
Right.
They think they're so shrewd that, well, you know, I'll get to make myself look good in front of Vince. Like Vince is not going to, he won't get it. Like, yeah, sure. Yeah, good luck on that, pal.
Right.
So, but that's the one I remember the most, because before, like I said, before we went out, we addressed that matter. He'd forgotten about it. So he was going by the old set of rules and say it. And I was going by the last I heard, which is whatever you do, don't say this.
Okay.
So
okay.
That's how it went.
Gotcha. It's interesting. I'm just thinking about it before I let you go. You're not going to say it. I'll say it. A lot of fans think you and Jerry Lawler are the greatest broadcast team ever. And you guys, the bulk of your years, the meaty years, were the Attitude Era. But the other announcers from there, I don't know if they stand out. Whereas in that Mean Gene era, it is amazing that you had, you know, Mean Gene, Bobby Heenan, Jesse Ventura, and even Vince, who was not exactly a, let's say, nuts and bolts play-by-play guy, but he did provide some interesting commentary, to say the least. And then you had Gorilla Monsoon, obviously. So that really seems like the heyday of the announcers in the WWE, even though the greatest broadcast team came later on. Would you agree with that assessment?
Yeah, a lot of talent. You can't replicate that kind of talent.
Yeah.
You know, Vince was a very underrated play-by-play guy. He knew how to keep the rudder in the water. Mm. He knew where he's going. Obviously, he was in charge of it.
Yep.
Monsoon was a treasure.
Yep.
And a wonderful man and a real true legend. Heenan, nobody ever did Heenan's job better than him.
Right.
Before or since. Nobody. End of story. There's no discussion. There's no debate. Oakland was the best interview guy, best interviewer that was ever in the business. So, and Ventura was, he was opening, he created a new role in the eyes of many as the villain color analyst.
Yeah, and had great chemistry with Gorilla and Vince.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but all those guys are just tremendous.
Yeah.
And they can't be, they come along when they come along.
Yeah.
And you can see that the announcers that are in the wrestling business today that have been trained in a somewhat of a sterile way, without a lot of on the road territory like preparation, they don't have the same feel and the same instincts that their predecessors often had.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting. It's such a different world wrestling now, as you know better than anyone. But I appreciate you coming on to talk about Mean Gene. I want to get you back on maybe around WrestleMania time. We'll get into real hardcore wrestling conversation. But I really just wanted to talk to Mean Gene, and I figured there'd be no one better than you. And I appreciate the time and conversation.
Lovely man.
Yeah, he was a
lovely man. I remember talking to him on Thanksgiving, and we were talking about. He said, "Well, you know, I'm trying to eat a little healthier, and I'm not drinking as much." And I said, "Well, that's good." He said, "Well, I'm only drinking red wine, basically."
All right. Well,
I said, yeah, but you're drinking a bottle a night.
Well, listen. So, you know what? It's the way. If when you get to that age, enjoy your life. Enjoy your life.
Damn right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Because I say this in my podcast, Jimmy, every week. It's so true, man.
Yep.
Our tomorrows are never guaranteed. It may sound like a lyric in a country song.
No, it's the truth.
It's true, man. We don't know.
It's the truth. Yep.
We ain't got a clue about tomorrow.
You got that right. You got that right.
So you make today good, and that's what I try to do. And Gene did that. Gene lived a hell of a life, man.
Yeah. The WWE ran a great video package on Raw, and you could tell he had a lot of fun with his job and his life.
Oh God, he had fun ad-libbing and producing himself, and had those great. And then the great thing is he had all those great talents to work with.
Yeah, yeah, it was a perfect storm.
And I had all these guys just phenomenal.
Yep.
So he's going to be missed, but man, I'm sad that he's gone.
Yeah, of course.
But I can't help but smile every time I think of it.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate it, JR. Jim Ross from the JR Report every Wednesday. Where can people find that? Tell them.
Our podcast is on. It's produced by Westwood One.
Okay.
It's wherever podcasts are available. You know, iTunes and Stitcher and all those places. Yep. Wherever you get your podcast, my podcast drops every Wednesday. It's doing very well. We appreciate the support, and hope folks will check it out.
All right, Jim. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Be well.
You bet, buddy.
Take care. You too. All right. My thanks to Joe Buck and Jim Ross. Really enjoyed this episode. I thought both really did a great job. I appreciate them coming on. Next week, Bill Walton right here on the SI Media Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review. It's a big help if you can do that. Hope you enjoyed this week's episode. We'll see you next week right here on the SI Media Podcast.